This is Churches in Action, hosted by KAAM Ambassador Tiffany Jones. Listen now as she presents natural, relevant conversations with popular Dallas-Fort Worth pastors, as well as other Christian leaders who will certainly minister to you and perhaps change your thinking on timely and timeless issues Texas Christians wrestle with every day. Here's Tiffany.
Welcome to CIA. I am Tiffany Jones, and I am really excited to tell you guys who is here today. His name is JP. His last name is very difficult to say.
You want me to help you?
I want you to say it for
Pacluda.
Us. Pacluda.
Yeah. If you look at it, it's so that you get the vowels. It's all there.
Oh, it is.
Pacluda.
Pacluda. We'd like to buy a vowel. Yeah. You're right. And just maybe a consonant. Okay, so here's the thing. He comes from a church that has a special place in my heart. He's the teaching pastor at Watermark, and I've had Todd on here before, which was a huge blessing. But JP wrote this book, Welcome to Adulting, and we want to welcome you to CIA, and I want to find everything about this book that we need to know.
Yes. Well, I'm so excited to be here, Tiffany. I wish, you know, our audience could hear just kindred spirits to sit down at this table in this place and to be able to share. It's going to be really fun. So thank you.
It really is. Okay. Welcome to Adulting. But I have to tell my listeners that they can't see you. Are you an adult? Because you look like you're about 16. He's so young looking, you guys.
Come on. I grew the beard out.
Did so you? Kind of, but no. That's probably what makes you relatable and how you get what is this adulting thing.
That's right. So when I kind of have a crazy story. 16 years ago, I was at a bar and someone invited me to church, and I might share some of that. But then I went into vocational ministry 5 years later, and one day they asked me to preach, to teach. And I was like, man, what do I know about writing a sermon? And all I was really bringing to the table, because they wanted me to teach to young adults, millennials, and I said, all I'm really bringing to the table is I know these guys, because 5 years ago, I was right where they're at. I was in the same bars, the same clubs they're at. I was making the same choices they're making. And so really, I told them, I said, hey, if you want me to do this, listen, all I'm really bringing to the table is I know where they're at. And really, for the last decade, God has used that to allow me, just to give me a ton of favor with millennials and young adults, and allow me to minister to them. So it's been fun.
That is fantastic. That's a blessing. Okay, so where are they at? I have a 21-year-old myself, and sometimes I'm not exactly sure where he is, geographically or mentally. And so, and he has his stuff together. He's a senior in college, and he's going to graduate on time and all of that. But sometimes I don't. Not sure he knows where he's at. So tell us where they're at and what do you feel like they need?
Well, let me start by saying where the world is saying they're at. And so just so your listeners, they're going to be nodding their head as they're driving down the road. And, you know, the world says they're narcissistic, they're lazy, they're entitled, all of these problems that mark them. And to that, I would just say that's true of young people, and it always has been, and we forget that. And what I see when I look at the future of the church is I see people who want to change the world. They want to do something bigger than themselves. They're very conscientious of our environment and wanting the world to be a better place. And the mistake that people are making is dumbing it down and not calling them to something, thinking, you know, saying they're no for them, saying, hey, you know, let me just try to make this easy. Will you just show up at this time, at this place? And that's not what Jesus did. Jesus, when he showed up on the scene, he could have used anybody. Think about that. Jesus could have used a baby. He could have used the elderly. But he chose these 12 men, 18 to 30. And he said, I'm going to change the world with you 12 men, right? And I don't even trust you, Judas, but still, you can run with us, you know? And he called them to something huge. He said, hey, one of them said, let me go bury my dad. Hey, you let the dead bury the dead. Follow me. Well, where am I going to sleep? Listen, foxes have holes. Birds have nests. The Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Follow me. He said, don't put your hand to the plow and look back. Follow me. To the rich young ruler who said, what do I need to do to follow? He said, sell everything you have, give it to the poor and follow me. Take up your cross and follow me. These are huge asks of people. And what I found with millennials, with young adults, is when you inspire them to something, they really rise to the occasion. And that's what I think you're going to see in your son and other people that follow behind him. When they catch a vision, they'll run up behind it.
And I have to say, I told you this before, and sometimes I've said this on the air. I do my research about my guests, like with one eye open, one eye closed, because I want it to be organic. But I have to admit, I was like, oh, when your publicist said that you were on Fox, I did go Google it because I have a crush on Ainsley.
Oh, she's great.
Hashtag girl crush. So something that she said I wanted to say on my show, Do you think that, like, the helicopter parenting, the lawnmower parenting, and all of that contributes to the millennials? Or do you think now these are just words that are coined? And like you said, these, we've always had kids that are, have these attributes.
I think every generation overcorrects, and that's been the overcorrection with the honorable mentions. And it's funny because the generation before them blames them, but it's really, it's the way that they were parented. It was the overcorrection that occurred in the Xers and Boomers and whatnot. And so I think helicopter parenting, lawnmower parenting, that absolutely is a reality. And I think there's something that happens within people. I call it the older brother syndrome. Is we've all been the younger brother in the story of the prodigal son. The younger brother, you know, he goes off, he's an idiot, he makes poor choices, and then he comes back and the father lavishes his love on him, and then he's on the estate. And so all of us go through that experience at some point. That, you know, if you're a Christian, you've come into the father's love. But then you grow up to be, you turn into the older brother. It's like you've always been on the estate. You've always been with the father. And then you have no patience for the younger brother. And every, you know, older person listening right now forgets that somebody was patient with them, that you once upon a time too made really dumb choices, you know, and someone sat down with you and they taught you these things. And so it's like I said earlier, they say about, you know, Gen Y, the most entitled generation ever. In fact, their number one and number two goals are to get rich and to be famous. But if you look in the scriptures, the number one question that the disciples asked Jesus is, who can sit at your right and left in your kingdom? Which of us is the greatest? An argument arose among them as to which of them was the greatest. We see this nine times in the gospel, or around nine times in the gospels. The generation A, you know, if we're Gen Y, generation A, the question that they would ask is, hey, what's in it for us? We want to be rich. We want to be famous. And so it's the same problem throughout, you know, every generation that shows up.
Yes. And the thing with patience, I was hung up on that when you said that, you know, older people were granted patience as they were young. Last week I'm in total different worlds. Last week I had two women in that work with people that have Alzheimer's and dementia, mm-hmm. and they were needing patience. So it's funny. That is
full
like
circle.
A total thread here that people need. What I thought was interesting, I was reading some of the things about your book, and one of the bullet points said, discovering your purpose on this earth. And I had a pastor in here one time that said, everybody needs to take a step into God's purpose for their lives. And there's something about in your book, you know, people want to make money and these, what you're saying about these young adults.
Yeah.
But there's something, maybe people are forgetting to use their gifts, right?
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely right. I think every gift that we have been given, we've been given by God. It says every good and perfect gift comes down from the Father of Heavenly Lights in James. And so every gift we have, we've been given by God, for God, that He's entrusted that gift to us for Him. And we lose sight of this because corporate America, your work environment, they will exploit your gifts for profitability. But the truth is the Father is the one who has given you that gift. And that's my story, Tiffany. When I moved to Dallas, and so we're in Dallas, Texas, when I moved here, I was kind of everything wrong with Dallas in one person. You know, I was pretentious. I was narcissistic, stuck on myself. I wanted to be a millionaire before I was 30. I had the Jaguar S-Type. We lived in a penthouse condo in Uptown. You know, I would go to this club. I had the VIP card to the club and get bottle service, and was just indulging. I mean, truly indulging in the world. And so if I look at that life, when I look at that season of my life, I see that I was wasting my life because I was using all of my gifts on me. And this is the mistake that I see people make. I know there's somebody listening right now that's where they're at. You're using all of your gifts on you, and you continue to run empty. You wake up, you feel despairing, you feel empty. You know, Solomon says that the Lord has set eternity in our hearts, and we're trying to fill that eternal void with the things of this world, but they're temporary. You know, and I've talked to thousands of people. You know, I've been in audiences of tens of thousands of people, and I'll ask them this question. I'll say, hey, tell me about your great-great-grandfather. Not your grandfather, or your great-grandfather, but your great-great-grandfather. And it's funny because in a room full of 10,000 people, I say, hey, who can come up here and tell me about their great-great-grandfather? I mean, tell me his name. I mean, his name. I mean, surely you know his name. His favorite color, what he did for fun, his hobbies, what he did for a living. And in a room full of 10,000 people, you'll blank. Maybe one person did a school project and they'll know his name, you know, but nothing else. And I'm like, let me tell you something. He was alive 50 years ago. I've done the math. 50 years ago, that man was alive. And here's what that means for you is 50 years after you're gone, nobody's driving down the road saying, oh, thank you, you know, great-great-grandmother so-and-so. Thank you, great-great-grandfather so-and-so. To dust you have returned. And so I hope you did something with your life of eternal significance. Because if you didn't, your life's going to be buried with you. And so there has to be something more that we live for.
I like that. That was amazing. And this speaks to, when I was looking at your packet, one of the questions they said that, you know, to ask you, you talk about following your passion is not good advice, contrary to what God's word teaches. And so I felt like that was part of the gift. So what do you feel like is the difference between a passion and a gift? And do you think you should be following your gift then?
Yeah, so your passions change. And let me just say this about the follow your passion being bad advice. It depends on what someone means by that. And so if Christ is our passion, our greatest desire, obviously following him, that's not bad advice. But the problem, and you think about this, especially with young adults and parents and grandparents, you've seen this in your children and grandchildren, is if they follow their passion, they're going to follow their passion in and out of relationship, you know, because you get into a relationship, and then when you don't feel passionate about it anymore, you get out of the relationship. In and out of jobs, you get into a job. You choose a major, and you're like, oh, like for me, I was an artist, you know, in high school, and so I wanted to be an art major, and so I go and study art. Well, here's what I learned about that is I'm not passionate about doing art when somebody's telling me to do it, you know, and I'm not passionate about doing it for money. And so I thought I was passionate about art, but now I've chosen a career path based on that passion, and it's not there anymore. And so we follow our passion in and out of things, and then what, we look flaky and it looks like there's no commitment. And so at some point you have to decide, hey, what am I committing to even when I'm not passionate about it anymore? How can I, you know, do this job even when I don't feel like it anymore? How can I pursue in this relationship even when I don't feel like it anymore? And the commitment has to come into play. And so that's really a big message for young people. So the difference between passion and gifting is our gifts are God-given to us, and we use them for him. Our passions often change with the wind. You know, they come and go like hobbies.
That resonates with me so much, the commitment. Life is about that. You have to commit to what you're doing, mm-hmm. no matter what it is. Like
That's
you
right.
said, relationship, a job, whatever that is. That's okay, right. I want to go back one little second. What is your great-great-grandfather's name? Do you know?
I don't. Oh. Harold, I think, but I'm not even sure.
Really?
Nobody knows their great-great-grandfather's name. And so, I mean, that's the reality.
I know when you say, I know my great, but not great-great.
No, great-great. No, I mean, very few people. Again, somebody did a school project and they'll be so proud and they'll come up and they'll say, hey, I know his name. You know, it was John. And I'm like, hey, tell me John's favorite color. They're like, well, I don't know his favorite color. I'm like, yeah, what do you know about him? Do you know his pant size? You know, do you know what his favorite shirt was?
But it's funny. So if John had done something to change the world, I bet the people that know, suppose they're great, 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 however many greats, Abraham Lincoln or something. Oh, yeah. I'm related to Abraham Lincoln. Yeah. Only if they did something huge, right? So that doesn't seem fair.
But even the huge, I mean, yes, Abraham Lincoln, and there are people with their names on buildings, but those buildings will tumble. You know, that's sure. what we need to know. And so other things you can do is I can throw out a name and I'll ask people, and I can't think of one right now. Well, hey, do you know who this person is? And they'll say, well, no. And I'm like, well, did you know they won 5 gold medals, you know, in the 1987 Olympics? Because they were a really big deal that year, but today nobody knows who they were, you know. And so that happens.
That's poignant.
To dust we will return.
Mm-hmm, it is. To dust we will return. Yeah. They say that when they're giving the ashes.
Yeah.
Some religions get the ashes. Yeah. And that's what they say when they put that on your forehead. That's
dust to dust.
Yes. Okay. So let's switch topics. I kind of like this topic because I don't think it's just for people in the age bracket that you're targeting. Mm. I'm raising my hand over here if my listeners could see. What are some things people can do to be clear in dating And what does dating intentionally mean? Okay, it's a total shift, but I had to get this question in. I want to know for myself.
Yeah. What can people do to be intentional in dating?
Yes.
So let me say this, because I know you're talking about the book. And so it was written really to be a gift, like from parents, from grandparents to their children. And so that's been the heart behind it. And I hope it's a resource, becomes a roadmap to our children. And so in dating, I think the one thing that we can do is, especially guys, I tell you, is be intentional. And so that's just to have a plan. Like, that's what people don't think is we date like it's a roller coaster ride because we're looking for the thrills and the feels and the ups and the downs, the manic highs and the manic lows. And it leaves us despairing. But if you just go into it and you apply a little bit of logic, why am I dating? You know, dating... In the late 1800s, it entered the vocabulary as a euphemism for prostitution. To go on a date meant to pay for sex. And do you think about how far we've come? Dating is a relatively very, very new idea, about 120 years old idea. And so in biblical times, it's arranged marriage. And so even in arranged marriages, you had a much lower divorce rate, much higher marriage satisfaction rate. And I understand the objections to that idea. I've studied the topic, but I would just say, as we get better at dating with apps and Tinder and
are we better though? I gotta tell you,
that's my point. Is we get worse and worse at marriage, and it's because I don't think we're dating with the end in mind, and that's what dating is for. Dating is a pathway to a promise. And you're talking back to the commitment, right? It's a pathway to a promise, and so if we're dating thinking, okay, I'm trying to figure out who I'm going to spend the rest of my life with, if we apply that logic and I'm only going to date them long enough to figure that out, then I think we'd be in a better place. I was talking to someone, I was doing a podcast yesterday, and they were asking me about this. And I just said, it's like if you went and played, you were dropped off to play pickup basketball, and they named you as a team captain, and you had to choose your team. You know, who would you choose? And the guy said, well, I would choose, the tallest and the most athletic, so that I could have the best team. And I said, well, likewise. And I said, why? And they said, well, because the object of the game is to put the ball through the hoop, and I think that person's going to have an advantage. And I said, well, what's the object of marriage? What are you trying to accomplish in marriage? We need to figure that out so that we can choose the right person, you know? And that, just knowing that, applying some logic, a little bit of pragmatism would help us, I think, in that topic.
I like that. And I want your opinion on this. So you really do speak to younger people, but I know my listeners, it's a broad base. So yeah. I'm talking to somebody maybe my age that's starting to date again. I'm having a total aha moment while you're saying all this, because the purpose at a certain age in dating is to get married, have a family, and, you know, to hopefully live together forever and ever. Mm-hmm. But as you reach a certain age, they don't really need to have a family anymore. Mm-hmm. They don't need to, you know, get married. They've already done that. So I kept thinking when I read this question, maybe it's not different, but do you think it could be?
Well,
it's two different ages. So as like millennials and then somebody my age, because people my age have already been married, have kids, and they're... Yeah. So should the purpose when you're dating always be to be looking for a mate? Because that is God's design.
Yeah, it's seeking a suitable spouse. That's how I would define dating, seeking a suitable spouse. And so I would just say, I think, the problem, or something to consider rather in your question, is we start to think through life of what do I want? What do I feel? What do I desire? And I think we need to maintain what I'll call a biblical worldview, which is, what does God want? What does God desire? What is His plan for the world? And I think marriage, brought up that word pragmatism a while ago. I think marriage is finding a helper because we need help. And it's not necessary. And so you can be single, but the Bible really only gives us one reason to be single, and it's for the sake of the kingdom. It's in Matthew 19. And Jesus was single. The Apostle Paul was single. And Jesus says, hey, if you can be single for the sake of the kingdom, He says, that's an amazing calling. Like, that's awesome. Way to go. I think it's Matthew 19:9. And so those are our two options. We can get married, be fruitful and multiply, make disciples. And even if we're past the age of being fruitful and multiplying through traditional procreation, you can still bring people in your home and make disciples and pour into them, you know, and teach.
And have a helpmate.
Yeah, and show them the way and have help. I mean, that's the helper. It's the same word for the Holy Spirit, Azer. It's what God is to us. He's our helper. And so we have help, or you can be single for the sake of the kingdom. Those are our two options.
Okay, so guys, stop swiping, start opening the Bible and realizing what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
Because the swiping, and you don't know what you're getting on there, right?
No, you don't know what you're getting. Profiles lie.
Do you feel like a lot of the people that read your book or that come to hear you are on these dating websites?
Yes. I think a lot of young adults, I mean, tons of folks, young adults, you know, it's just the way, right? And so that I've written articles on online dating. Is it wrong? You know,
what does the Bible say about
that's
that?
That's exactly what I was going to say. I believe in the Bible. And unfortunately, it doesn't say a lot about online dating. You wouldn't believe this, but it doesn't even talk about the internet, not anywhere. And so, but it does give us these principles that we can apply. And so some principles are, you know, I wouldn't date a stranger. I mean, that's the way I think about it. Like, I wouldn't go on a date just to get to know somebody. I would go on a date to get to know somebody more, you know. I really think the ideal is that, you know, we're in this body or this community governed by some elders or church authority. And as we're in that, we're seeing people serve and give and live virtuous lives. And as we do that together, at some point we're like, hey, do you want to do this together? You know, we're already doing it together, but would you like to do it together more intentionally and spend more intentional time together? And I think that's probably God's ideal. In Song of Solomon, it says, I think it's 1:4, their friends praise their love more than wine. And it's to say that the friends and family celebrated that couple more than the party in and of itself, and that they brought them together. And so that's what I think arranged marriage looks like today, is everyone around you saying, hey, you two, man, y'all should be together. That just makes a ton of sense. Like, y'all just kind of belong together. And then you keep going.
And I've said that on this show, the community, I think being married takes a community behind you too.
Oh yeah.
You have to have people holding you accountable. You have to have people supporting you. I think without that, it just crumbles.
Yeah.
The community is so important.
Absolutely.
Okay, so speaking of online, stop swiping, but get online and buy this book, y'all. Okay, it's called Welcome to Adulting. Where can they get this? Can you tell us websites and all that information?
You can get Welcome to Adulting everywhere books are sold. And so hopefully your local bookstore has it, Barnes & Noble, whatnot. It's also on Amazon. And if your local bookstore doesn't have it, I would ask you to go up there and ask them to carry it. But welcometoadultingbook.com is the website for the book, and that will list out all the different places. But everywhere books are sold.
The thing that I think is nice about this book, it's not just for people that are getting into adulting. Yeah. I think this is helpful for somebody that's raising an adult. Like, I have a young adult, and I need a little help on figuring out what's going on with him. Yeah. So I think this book is very fitting for anybody at any stage to understand. And like you were saying, older people understanding that younger people need patience. And so it's really for anybody.
Yeah, Tiffany, I'm a pastor. The truth is, I don't. My publicist is right over there. She's not going to like me saying this. I don't give a rip about selling books, okay? And so I'm serious. I want to help people. And so I wrote this book to help people. And I would tell you know, your listeners, hey, don't buy it. Buy 10 of them. Because, you know, that's what we did, is we just keep them in our gift closet and use them as, like, you know, birthday cards, because the title's so suitable for birthdays, gifts, and graduation gifts and whatnot. And so it's like, here's your birthday card, or here's your birthday gift. And you know, I hope it's helpful. If it's not helpful, I hope nobody reads it. But it's what I've heard from those that have read it is, hey, it's been really helpful.
If you could tell, do you have a favorite chapter in here?
Yes, I do have a favorite.
You
chapter.
Do? Okay, tell us.
My favorite chapter is the last one on eternity, and so chapter 11, and so do you want me to just tell you about
it? Tell us about it, yes.
Oh, man, there's so much to say. So let me just say about the book, the subtitle is Navigating Faith, Friendship, Finances, and the Future. And so it talks about dating. It talks about money. It talks about resolving conflict. It talks about being responsible with your finances. It talks about finding your purpose, finding your calling. It talks about the way that I tell a lot of my personal stories about how I missed it for so long, getting all swept up in the world. But the last chapter is the most important to me, because it reminds me that I'm living for something more. And I tell the story of the first time I was asked to do a funeral, that a guy had passed away, and his two sons had survived him. And so I went to meet with the two young adult sons as a young adult pastor at the time. And I didn't know where I was going, but I pulled up to this house. It's the largest house I'd ever seen. It had this huge, you know, Jurassic Park door that slowly opened up, and we drove down this cobblestone road, and I just pulled up to this mansion. And the yard looked like the Arboretum. It was perfectly manicured, and it was in the most expensive part of town. It was in the city, but it was on acres and acres of land, most expensive land in the city. And a beautiful estate. I walked inside. He had literal Monets and Rembrandts on the wall. It was that kind of house, and everything in it was big and mahogany, but there were these Post-it notes everywhere. And as I sat down with the sons, I said, hey, you know, they're mourning their loss of their father. I said, what's up with the Post-it notes? And they said, well, you know, Dad had a lot of things, but in his last days, he just wanted to be reminded of the Word of God, surrounded by the Word of God. So he'd have us write up verses and put them up on the wall. And I just said, well, what else? And they said, well, you know, he had lots of money, millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars. And he goes, in his last days, he just wanted to give it all away. And he would get frustrated that he couldn't because it was locked up in trust and whatnot. And I said, wow, what else? They looked at each other and they started laughing. And they said, well, they both said at the same time, don't wait. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, in his last days, he would just sit up in bed. And he said, don't wait like I did. And he'd want to share the gospel and share the hope. Because that's what we're looking for. You know, everybody listening right now, you're looking for hope, right? You want a reason to live. You want a purpose. And that's what the God that I found, that's what he offers, is hope. And he goes, don't wait like I did. Offer people hope. Tell them how they can live forever. And so as I wrote this book, I knew that I wanted a part of it to be, you know, explaining to people what life is really about and how you can live forever.
Well, I have a feeling that you are going to live forever. You know, you say people don't remember the great-great-grandfather, but I think people might remember the name of this book and your name, because I feel like you are a gift. And your voice is so soothing. I told you when you came in, I said, listen, I could just have him talk to me. I might take a nap in the chair. It's so soothing and relaxing. Okay, welcome to Adulting, Navigating Faith, Friendship, Finances, and the Future. JP, we are blessed that you came in today. I hate to wrap up, but I have to.
Hey, friend, thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming to Churches in Action, and thanks for listening to CIA. We will CIA you next week.
This has been Churches in Action with Tiffany Jones. For more information on the pastor you just heard, go to 770KAAM.com and click on the Churches in Action page, or call KAAM at 972-445-1700. Thank you for listening to CIA and to all of the quality programming on 770 KAAM. For the betterment of our walk as believers and on behalf of God, country, and Texas.